CliffCentral.com. Yeah, it's Lizzo with Juice. CliffCentral.com. It is 2 minutes after seven. Good morning, Monday. Yes, the start of a brand new week, the start of a brand new month, and some people were extremely excited about the fact that it was 02/02/2020 yesterday. Like, that isn't a totally made up number.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the first global palindrome day in 909 years.
Oh, I've been waiting 909 years for this.
There were a lot of people who got married in Vegas on that day.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it obviously means that it's the same when read forwards as backwards. And it works in both formats, the stupid American way of doing it and the proper English way of doing it.
Yeah, but let's all stop with the fact that this is meaningful in some way to the universe. Because remember, the calendar was made up by humans. It has no real position in space or time. It is totally man-made, artificial, fabricated, manufactured.
There's nothing spiritual about this.
There's nothing spiritual about it at all, because it is just a number on an arbitrary calendar which was begun on the supposed day of Jesus Christ's birth, which is unclear to everyone, all right?
Yeah.
Everyone. No one was there at the time with mathematical instruments and astronomical observations in order to calculate precisely at what space in the universe's long history.
So you're telling me
one human being was born.
The fact that it's the year of the firecracker meeting the dove means nothing?
Means zero. And by the way, so does your birthday, I'm afraid.
Hey, it's a little personal for you to say that today.
Not just you, Sia.
A little raw, too soon.
Yeah, let's talk about it tomorrow.
Everybody's birthday. It's just a collection of numbers. I mean, listen, I love a little numerology when I'm feeling a bit woo-woo, and I love a little astrology when I'm feeling even more crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But we know it's mostly nonsense, right? I mean, give it up, guys.
Yeah, I'm ready for this conversation tomorrow.
Well, if you did believe in it, you would have gotten married in Vegas at 2 a.m., just after 2 a.m.
At 2:02.
2:02 and 20 seconds. On 02/02/2020.
Don't mention this too much. You know, Mbulelo already hates weddings. Now having to wake up early to attend a wedding at 2 a.m. That, just whisper just a bit.
So the previous...
You would hate that, right?
Oh, God. Just get married in the court and get back to work.
Or just don't get married.
You're so grumpy.
So the previous one was 909 years ago on 11/11/11/11. And the next will come in 101 years on the 12th of the 12th, 21/21.
Oh, none of us will be there for that one.
No.
And none of us were there in 11/11, right? Gareth. Anybody?
Except Betty White. She was there. She remembers.
Speak for yourself. I'm going to be an android. I'm going to live forever.
Okay.
Ooh, okay, but...
Android. I still can't even make one charger for Android, iPhone, and USB-C. They can't create just one. Just choose one, you idiots. Aren't you annoyed by that?
But Europe has enforced a law now. All new phones have to have a singular charger. You can't...
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
This is where I'm for legislation, yeah. Because I don't need... You know, my laptop has a different charger to my phone, and they're both by the same manufacturer, by the way. And then there are other things that use the Android charger. So I have to have 200 cables with me wherever I go.
And our laptops, because I've got the same one as you, also doesn't have a USB.
No.
So you've got to have something special for
exactly. that. Exactly. And here's the problem, is that I left my charger here over the weekend. On Friday when I left work, I left my laptop charger here. So I was like, shit. Now I've got problems, because you can't just charge it off one of the phone chargers.
Mm-mm.
It's a major issue. These are things that drive people crazy. Make us mad.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Yeah. Need Mugatu.
One big difference between men and women that is worth remarking on this morning. This is according to one of the messages that we've just got. This one from Oki says, one big difference between men and women. If a woman says, smell this, it usually smells nice. If men do that.
Seriously.
Listen, on that note, there is a certain flower, which is very common, we all know it, that if you smell it, it gives your brain a boost. And they've just done tests on a whole lot of kids.
Ooh.
They took sixth grade students, split them into two groups. Both groups were given the same language lessons, which they worked on shortly before bedtime. One group was instructed to place rose-scented incense on their desks while studying.
Okay.
Control group had no fragrance.
Yes.
They then tasked them with completing a vocabulary test based on the information they'd studied.
Okay.
And an overall increase of 30% for learners who used the rose incense.
Huh.
During studying and sleeping. 30%, wow. That's huge.
Hmm. That's amazing.
That's worth a try. If you're studying at the
roses,
moment.
So roses, huh?
Yeah, put some roses on your desk or get some rose-infused essential oil.
That's fantastic.
It's amazing.
So humans have always said stop and smell the roses. Now we know why. It actually gives your brain an actual boost.
Yeah.
That's terrific. All right, I do want to go into this thing. A South African-born YouTuber set up Katie Hopkins, that right-wing nutcase, and got her to accept a Cunt Award, C-U-N-T Award, which stands for?
Campaign to Unite Nations Trophy.
So here's a little bit of her speech. It's just unbelievable. Let me play this for you.
Mohammed in a school playground in the UK, 2,000 kids come running and you don't want any of them. Epileptics are all weirdos. They're up there with the Asians. East London's fed in the best of times. 82% Muslim, what can I say? Most people are raping their own mother.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was the South African-based or born YouTuber.
Josh Peters, right? Mm-hmm. That's his name. And he set up this business called the Cape Town Collective for the Freedom of Speech and invited her, and she came all the way to Prague to collect this award.
Yeah, he shows you the emails, and she actually comes across really nicely in the emails.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, it's not often that I get offered nice things and nice feedback, so this is fantastic. I'll come.
Apparently, there was this awards night that was given in her honor. She accepted the trophy and then made this speech, which was awful.
I guess Muslims are different. I believe his name was Baha 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 Baha. Anyway, they practice because they're such retards. How dare you? Autistic f***ing wench.
Wow. Ugh. She's been taken off Twitter, right?
Yes, she's since been banned because all of her tweets were insensitive. Now, what was quite interesting is that this guy set this up really well, and he hired actors to sit in the room and laugh, and were instructed to have them laugh at everything that she said.
Now, I don't like anything about Katie Hopkins. She sounds like a horrible person. She sounds like that... that aunt that you get at the Christmas party who's just very, you know, nationalistic and racist and angry and vicious and nasty and cruel and all of those things. But I do, some part of me is still a little sympathetic to the fact that she was led down the garden path. Now,
She was only made to look a little bit silly.
No. I totally get that. I'm not worried about her reputation. That's not what I'm saying. If it happened to you, let's say someone invited you under false pretexts to something and you were under the impression that you were there for a certain reason. Because remember, the most important thing about when you speak to an audience, and we've seen this with politicians, when they talk to one audience one way and another audience another way, because they believe that they are addressing that audience directly. Now, she doesn't know who she's talking to here. So we get to see her true colors, and trust me, they're not great colors. I'm not going to defend her at all, but there is something about being misled like this. There's something that is dishonest about it from the other side that makes it look almost like she was being caught in a trap here. And as much as she's been caught in a trap, and now we've seen what kind of a person she is, and that's totally good, because it allows people to see what I think they suspected anyway about her, right, is that there's very little about this. And, I mean, it's just a terrible scene because she's in this room with, like, 8 people, maybe? 10 people?
All the actors.
Really small. It's
they actually have a full-on dinner before.
It's not like an auditorium. Awkward. Yeah, the whole thing is just very awkward. Now, I just try to put myself in the position of the person who set this up. which is, it's very clever. You've revealed her to be the horrible person she is. And then I try to put myself in her shoes. I'm thinking, I get flown to this place under false pretexts. Mm. I get put up in a hotel. I get taken to this dinner. I get told I'm winning a trophy. You know, if this happened to anyone else, they would go along with it too. And it's just some part of the back of my mind is niggly about this. It's like, there's something deceitful about the way that she was caught out that makes it not 100%. You know, if she got up on a stage in front of the world, like on social media, and said these things, then she would have to bear full responsibility. Yeah. And I think she does anyway because of what's been revealed.
She knew that it was being filmed.
Yeah, I think it's great that this happened, but I just think it's very awkward when people are misrepresented. And she's not been misrepresented here, but the whole event was misrepresented to her. So I read it and I kind of laughed, because I think when you can catch people out and they think they're talking to a specific audience, turns out they're talking to a totally different audience, the world, then they deserve whatever happens. Yeah. And that happens to a lot of people on social media.
There are definitely two sides to this, and something that doesn't sit well.
Yeah, it's just, it's a little uncomfortable, even though I like what's happened. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she actually makes a fool of herself without any special non-award ceremonies.
Yes.
My favorite was when she was on the morning show in, it's called This Morning in the UK, with Holly Willoughby and Philip Schofield.
Yeah.
And she said she doesn't want her children to play with lower class kids. There's certain kids, if they have the names, these lower class names like Charmaine, Chantel, Chardonnay and Tyler, that she would prevent her children from playing with them.
Wait, but also, who calls their kids Chardonnay?
Oh, lots of people do in the UK.
Someone calls a child Chardonnay?
But you're not going to stop your child from playing with him because you think they're lower class,
I would. Okay, I would.
I would.
she also said that.
You and I are as bad as Katie Hopkins. I would.
She then went on to the country and geographical names like Brooklyn or London. And then Paul Schofield pointed out in the interview, but your daughter's name is India.
Oh, well, she's...
So she makes a fool of herself.
Yeah, that's silly.
Silly award ceremonies.
Oh, wow, okay. She's a very unpleasant person. Go and look
her
up.
She actually gained weight at one point. She purposefully gained weight just to lose it.
So she could prove that being fat was...
Fat is not an excuse. Really? You can lose weight, yeah. And she said, there is no way that fat people are happy.
Well, she may have a point. Listen, the problem is that someone like this, the only reason we even take notice of her is that once in every 10 times she says something that is true, uncomfortable as it may be. You know, it's like Hitler might have said one or two true things, even though he was a hateful bigot. That's why we took him seriously. Unfortunately, too little too late. You know, Neville Chamberlain waving around a piece of paper. But the fact is that these bad people, and I say bad people because it's a matter of us just, nothing's shades of gray. Everything's all bad or all good. And someone like her occasionally gets things right, which is why she upsets people. If she always was wrong and everything she said was utter bullshit, and bear in mind, like, most of what she says is utter bullshit, but if everything she said was utter bullshit, we could just dismiss her as a person. Unfortunately, the fact that she goes to the trouble of putting on weight and then losing it just to prove that fat people are lazy, which is what she tried to prove in that case, and that you can get your weight under control, it's a question of personal responsibility, that irritates people, because there's some part of her that, it's not true for everybody, there's some part of what she did that hurts, because it hits close to home.
Well, so there's probably a good polarity here to look at. There's Candace Owens, I don't know if you know who that is.
She's awesome.
So I think she's a moron.
But you think she's a moron?
Yeah, she's an absolute moron.
I like her. She's, again, she's an individual. She's, okay, so she's a black conservative in America. She's a Republican. She's a pro-Trumper. She's one of these people who just does not like the idea of collective identity. Sure. So she's anything that involves you labeling her, she immediately rebels against.
But okay, but the difference.
Why do you think she's a moron, by the way?
Because you have to listen to her talk, and you just like she can't put a sentence together. But Katie Hopkins is not a moron. She's unpleasant, but she's an extremely well-resourced, highly educated individual. Mm. So as much as she's unbearable for her notions, but she's not an idiot, you know. Which makes her, yeah, that's.
I don't think Candace Owens is a moron. Got to be likelier. See, differences of opinion.
Let's agree to disagree.
Yeah, both of these people are clearly causing shit wherever they go. Yeah. And there's a part of me that kind of likes that because I'm one of those people who causes shit wherever
that's
I
exactly
go.
That's exactly what made me send it to you because I needed to hear your opinion on it.
But I don't need to like Katie Hopkins. I don't need to like. I don't have to hate you either, by the way. Mm-hmm. Make your contribution. Let the chips fall where they may. That's all I have to say. The last thing you want to do is shut people up.
Yeah.
Because then they can't reveal that they're morons or that they're right.
Well, she's been shut up on Twitter.
Yeah, you see, I think that's wrong. Really, I think that's wrong. What, to protect people who she might hurt? She might hurt our feelings? Well, we're such children, we need to be protected from Katie Hopkins. She's just been revealed to be an idiot. She was led down the garden path by this YouTuber. She's a moron. What are you worried about? She's going to hurt your feelings? How weak are you if someone who can be misled like this can make you feel bad? Bring her back onto Twitter. Let's see what stupid stuff and what upsetting things she can say. And we can divine for ourselves what's true and what
isn't.
Free
the insufferable snob.
Yes, exactly. Let her out. And remember, if you don't, then she does end up going to these quiet little events. And some of them are not made up by YouTubers. For all we know, some of them are organized by dangerous people who have real evil agendas. Mm. You're going to force this underground? Bad idea. All right. Mm. What else is going on?
Just if you are traveling, and perhaps to Prague.
Travel advisory time with Leanne
Moore. Travel advisory. Some things have changed with the Schengen visas,
yes,
which starts in February, which is now. Mm. Price increases is number one.
Oh.
So basically the fee, you're looking at it increasing from 60 euros to 80 euros. So it's quite a big increase. So it would mean like 958 rand to 1,277 per application. And then some fee changes as well regarding children. But the one thing is you can now stay for longer if you want to, longer periods of time. Because before they were limited to a certain amount of time. Now these have been extended, which is great. If certain criteria are met, you can even be eligible to receive multiple entry visas for 5 years.
Hmm.
Which is nice.
That's better.
And then longer application times can now take up to 6 months in advance of your trip instead of the current 3 month window.
Mm.
So one needs to do some planning.
Yeah, but the problem is with some of these, don't you have to have your tickets already?
Yes.
You have to submit your tickets with that stuff. Now, if you're doing this 6 months in advance, I don't know how many people buy their tickets 6 months before the fact.
No, but you don't need to have... If you
bought them on SAA, you're in big trouble.
Anyway,
huge trouble.
Whoopsie.
But remember, you all you need to do is provide a booking. That you don't need to provide a paid-for ticket.
Quite right. Thank you, Mulelo. See, he's the most well-traveled... He's the most well-traveled of all of us.
There we go.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, so those are just some things.
Some useful things to know.
Oh. Good news on the Schengen thing there.
All right. What do you have to add? Anything that you've got planned travel-wise this year that you need to let us know about?
I am hoping to run a mountain race in Switzerland later this year. So let's hold thumbs.
Only part of that I liked was Switzerland.
Yeah, got a 100K race in the Swiss mountains.
That is amazing.
Holding thumbs.
But I think it was Sia who said he's got a friend who's planned a trip to China.
No, not anymore. If you had a friend who had a trip plan to China, I think they're probably going to find something else to do.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this had only just started and she was like, I'm still going to go. But it's changed in the past few weeks has been...
There are places now that you just, they won't allow you in and you won't be allowed to go, according to some people.
Just so go to Belita now.
Belita?
Yeah.
I mean, for the win.
No Corona there.
Yeah, well, except the light beer. Yeah. Shame, and Corona have really been trying very hard to maintain some sort of composure as they have been dragged into this. I don't know whether they are jokes or not, but I've seen some memes going around of the Corona official account saying, "It's not fucking us. It's this disease. It has nothing to do with
so
us."
Yeah, so I actually fact-checked that, and I went on to...
Because I can't believe the brand managers for Corona would actually talk like that.
Because the meme seemed to have come from a Corona... How do you spell it? Oh, I don't know why it's not coming up. It seemed to have come from a Twitter thing. I mean, sorry, an Instagram thing.
Yeah.
But if you actually go onto the Corona account, it's not there, that meme. So I think it was made up. And then you've also got, because it's called Corona Extra, there were some tweets going around where they changed the name to Ebola Extra.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't think they've actually got involved in anything.
They should.
Well, they should capitalize,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they should definitely jump on that.
I don't know. Anyway, Sia watches the Super Bowl every year, and he watches it for the halftime show. There is another reason to watch the Super Bowl if you're not a person who loves football, and that is for the commercials in between. So there is a brilliant Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi Super Bowl commercial. I'm going to see if I can play this for you. I'll have to explain parts of it that are visual.
Baby, coming. Alexa, turn down the thermostat.
Okay, turning down thermostat.
Ready. Huh, here we go. What do you think people did before Alexa?
Alexa, turn the temperature down 2 degrees.
They had servants, right? So this woman throws wood out of the fire.
Thank you, dear.
Through the window.
Alexa, tell me a joke.
Jokes.
He's a court jester.
Yes. God, you think I know lies. Look at me.
Next.
News. Get your news here.
Alex, what's today's news?
Doesn't matter. It's all fake.
Some kid in the street.
On the cobbled street.
Al, play that song I like. Al, next song.
The guy in a wagon.
Alexei, tell us something interesting.
Okay.
It's a woman who's busy with
she's
one
like
of those
a washerwoman. Yeah.
So her friend is now going to tell us something interesting.
Interesting. Okay. The earth is flat and a witch stole his pants.
The man walks past without pants.
It's really so smart.
Message to Prince Constantine.
And this is a woman with a dove. And it gets taken up by a hawk, which gets taken up by a dragon.
Alicia, remind me to delete those tapes.
Yes, Mr. President.
That's Richard Nixon, right?
I ain't deleting.
Yeah, I don't know what people did before Alexa. Alexa, play my favorite song.
That's very clever.
It's
so that's
really smart.
Yeah.
It's a great commercial.
I like that.
I wonder how much it cost, really.
Fortune, I'll tell you.
Well done.
Absolute
hey,
fortune.
Sure.
All right, and then this one, which is from Jeep, which is also pretty good.
Okay, campers, rise up.
That's the alarm clock, and who is this dude again? This actor, famous actor. Get to it in
a second.
It's Groundhog Day!
This guy from Groundhog Day.
Oh, no. Phil Murray.
Phil Murray.
Hey, Phil!
No, not you.
It's me, man, Ryerson!
Okay, little fella, good job.
That's different.
He sees the Jeep, and it's the only different thing about Groundhog Day.
Hey! He's got the groundhog! Phil?
Hey, you're gonna freeze to death.
Who cares?
See you tomorrow.
Anyway, it's cute because if you watched Groundhog Day, you'll see like they've actually taken the idea and they've turned it around. Very, very smart. People spend so much money on these Super Bowl commercials. Advertising agencies spend their lives trying to get it right. Good work.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see that in this time and space of ratings going down if the Super Bowl still survives. But I mean, it's sport, and sport is
I think it's
still massive.
It's going to survive. It's just a question of whether or not the people be watching in their droves like they used to before. It was a national event, right?
Mm.
Now it's just less of that. And you know, a lot of people watched the Grammys. I didn't. But there's still people who do. And if you did watch the Grammys, you know what I'm talking about. Like, it's for some people, it's an important part of their lives. Mm. The Oscars, Didn't they happen now?
Nope.
Next weekend.
Oscars are coming up on the 9th, I think.
Okay. So it's next weekend. And I wouldn't watch that, would you?
What's that? The Super Bowl or the Oscars?
No, the Oscars.
No, it's all of it. It's a joke.
You know, I didn't even know that it was still coming. I was it might have happened yesterday.
You know, I still haven't. I have the Grammys on catch up, and I still haven't made my way through it. It's too long. Mm. It's like more than 2 hours long, and the Oscars are known as well to be like 3 hours long. If it's too much time, I can't do it.
Mm. Here are a couple of messages that have come in this morning, and you can always get hold of us on 0797482090. I'm celebrating, says Sandile. This is the first time in my listening experience that Mbulelo has disagreed with Gareth. I also think Candace Owens is an idiot. I once asked you why you want to interview her.
Well, she's a figure of interest.
Yeah, I mean, this is where Mbulelo and I will agree, is that even if you think someone's an idiot, sometimes it's fun to talk to them. I don't think she's an idiot. He does. Be great to hear what she has to say and how she's got to become this this very big talking head in America.
Would you want to speak to Katie Hopkins?
Probably. I like to talk to people who are controversial.
I'd also love to chat to her.
All new cell phones will apparently have the same charger port, USB-C, except Apple. They will stick to Lightning. To be woke and different and difficult. Yeah. I just wish they were all the same.
WDD, woke, different and difficult.
Yeah. Okay, it's almost 7:30, and our guest for this morning in Meet the Mind is Polly van Wyk, is someone that we have had on the show before. She's a very brave journalist. She's done some amazing stuff in the last while, and everybody's talking about her. So we thought we'd get to meet her this morning. Meet the Mind, Season 1, Episode 5, and coming up, Polly van Wyk. Henley Business School's Africa Connect alumni platform was launched in November 2019, and the opening event brought together some of the school's most prominent students and graduates. Polly van Wyk is an author and journalist for one of South Africa's most progressive publications, The Daily Maverick. As someone whose livelihood depends on the right knowledge at the right time, she understands the importance of education and qualification. We asked her if a person could be overqualified, though.
No, most definitely not. Information will always be your friend. A degree, not necessarily so much, but the more information and the better you understand the world that you live in, and to better yourself as part of that, and to better South Africa as part of that. And you cannot live in this country and move from where we are to a place where we want to be, not bettering yourself.
This is Meet the Mind, the series that gives you insight into some of South Africa's most interesting thinkers, brought to you by Henley Business School. That's right. Well, a day in the life of Polly van Wyk is anything but dull. It can range from helping to break Gupta leaks, finding out what happened to the VBS millions, and now even working towards her MBA at Henley Business School. She has a huge amount on the go, and for us to find out about her, we're glad she's able to pop in for this installment of Meet the Mind. How are you, Polly? Nice to see you.
Good morning. Yes, thank you so much for having me.
You're looking alive and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and full of full of the joys of happy summer. But I know that you've had a pretty tough couple of months. I mean, you've had to be very careful about your personal safety. You've had threats from people that you've been investigating as a journalist. This has not been the easiest year for you, has it?
No, it's been an amazing year and a great year and an impactful year, but it hasn't been easy.
So just how exactly are things at the moment in terms of your day-to-day life? Is it hard to kind of figure out what you're doing? Do you have to keep changing your plans? Are you concerned constantly about your safety? Do you still get as many threats from people? Because what you've done is you've revealed in some of your investigations that there are people who are stealing money from old people, robbing banks basically on a grand scale. And these people are instead of just letting investigations carry on and truths come out and things be discovered that need to be discovered, and you doing your job without fear or favor, these people decide that if they can just shut you up, their lives will be easier. And they've tried all kinds of nefarious ways to do this. How does it feel at the moment, and what are you doing about it?
Yeah, exactly. It was quite a hectic end towards the year, and we had to move around every week. So there was a space in 6 months where I was sort of at a different place every week, especially to tell your parents, you know, I'm fine, don't worry. So they were hectically worried about me. Fortunately, I have the backup and I have the fantastic editor who helps and protects and shields.
You're talking about Branko at the Daily Maverick. Yes. Yeah.
So fortunately, the very high pressure and volatile situation changed a bit towards, it sort of fizzled out over Christmas and New Year. But I guess it will start again once we start rewriting, you know, because there's so much left to tell. Mm. People tell us, you know, the VBS story should be left alone.
Who's telling you that? Besides the EFF themselves. I mean, who's telling you to... Why would people want to bury a story that's so important? These are supposedly the saviors of the poor. The EFF, they're trying to position themselves as being the people who care about ordinary South Africans, and particularly disenfranchised black South Africans who've been victimized by all the systems that came before, and the current system, frankly. And yet these are the people stealing from the poor.
Exactly. So... certain political parties like the ANC and the EFF don't like it when you tell them that they've been corrupt and that you shine a spotlight on what they've done, especially not, as you said, when they campaigned on a ticket of anti-corruption. And the EFF was a savior or positioned themselves as the savior for quite some time.
And they turn out to be just hypocrites.
Yeah, well, that's VBS, clearly...
So as I understand it, and we're not going to go into too much detail here because I didn't bring you here to talk about this story, but VBS has been pillaged. They've had, over a period of a couple of months, they had all of their money that was put in by hardworking people, not necessarily well-off people, people whose pensions were put in there, people who had saved.
And orphans and mine workers' children.
Right, and that money was just stolen and used to fund Floyd's brother's thing and Julius's this and all kinds of hideous things.
Yeah, and the ANC's campaign funding, you know. But this VBS story is the perfect example of how corporate South Africa and the political parties started working together and how there's actually no real party lines here, especially in the provinces. You'll see how ANC and EFF aligned people will work together with business and with the sort of the bank managers in order to fleece money from the bank. And you see that repeating in different stories. So the VBA story is easy to prove because there's a fantastic money trail, but it also shows us that there's a lot more, and that that the thing that it's only an EFF situation or only an ANC problem, it's not true. There's a deeper problem in South Africa where we think that now that we're in power, we can disenfranchise the people that's already vulnerable. And that story needs to be told and needs to be highlighted.
Go after the weak people because they can't do anything about it.
They can't fight back, right? They have some people fighting for them and then the pressure is just purely to make you stop.
Now, in between all of this crazy stuff, which is part of your job that you've been used to for years, you decided to do an MBA.
Yeah, feels like the worst life choice in the world.
You're taking on quite a lot of work. You don't mind my saying this. Maybe you're a sucker for punishment.
Yes. A friend of mine the other day told me, I don't really feel sorry for you. You brought it on yourself.
All right, so what made you make this decision?
I don't have a financial background, so everything that I know and the way that I conduct my financial investigations was sort of self-taught. Yeah. But as you know, then when you teach yourself things, there are gaps. And I always wanted to do an MBA, and I always wanted to broaden my knowledge base. So I always thought like a broader financial degree would help a lot with what I'm doing at the moment. Journalism and media, in the broader mention of the word, is in trouble. Finances are depleted. Our funding is decreasing. Yeah. So there's a lot that a business mind can attribute to someone who already understands the industry very well.
So in other words, you're sharpening your skills, and at the same time you want to learn about how business works, not just so you can be a better journalist, but so that you can see other opportunities and perhaps exploit those where necessary.
But it also gives you confidence because, you know, I'm self-taught in my industry. There wasn't a degree for what I do when I was at varsity. And so everything that I've had to learn in my business has been self-taught. And it does leave you a little bit lacking in self-confidence. Mm. Am I doing the right thing? Is this how it's really done? Mm. And so I go on courses within my field. You feel a bit of
that imposter syndrome sometimes. You're like, what the hell am I doing?
Exactly that. Yeah. So you go on courses and you do them and you realize that you actually might even know more than they do or that you thought. And it's such a huge confidence booster.
Well, that is indeed so, yeah.
You are the inaugural winner of the brand new Salt Plaquey Scholarship for Media Professionals alongside Tabiso Tagali, who's the news editor of the Sowetan. And these scholarships were established to honor South Africa's journalism practitioners, rather, by giving current media practitioners a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to step out of the newsroom or studio and into the classroom and hopefully emerge with some extra tools, which is what you were saying, to recalibrate the media industry when they graduate. And the media industry does need some help. I mean, there are very poor journalists out there too who are applying their trade at a minimum wage because it's something that they fell into or it was something that they studied at university hoping they'd get some meaningful work to do and have ended up being, you know, gossip journalists at some rag of a newspaper that's running out of money. What you're talking about is taking things to a level that's above, obviously, rather than dropping down to that level. And I mean, the work that you've been doing up to now is obviously the kind of stuff that we want to see more of in South Africa. There's plenty to be investigated.
Very much so. And good journalism is very expensive. So as I'm sitting here, I haven't written or published anything since the start of 2020. I mean, that's how expensive I am. Because when you're an investigative journalist, the focus is on news that you can prove and that's new and that
why
you
are you
can
so
actually,
bloody expensive Polly?
That you can actually back up in a court,
sure,
right? But and those
in other
aren't
words, there's a lot of forensic work that takes place. Sometimes you have to find lawyers, you have to find accountants, you have to find other specialists who can corroborate the evidence that you've discovered
and prove that's the heaviest burden, to actually say that I can tell you that you're corrupt and you're corrupt in this way and this is money laundering, that you've just this whole series of payments. And that's the problem here, is that we have these day-to-day journalists, like there's an accident here or there was a murder there. But journalism is, when you really want to do it exceptionally well, it's expensive. And that is, there's a disjointed problem where we don't have the funding and where people don't understand that journalism is expensive. And firstly, we have to try and tell them that and show them that, but we also have to get a business model that sort of fixes that problem and that can work with that problem.
Well, and now that you are such an expensive investigative journalist, and I mean,
your words.
No, but I think this is great. I'm teasing you, but at the same time, it's terrific that there are people who have the kind of qualifications and capabilities that you do. That means that we can discover interesting things about politicians and business people and, you know, all kinds of other nefarious characters in South African society. The reality is, like, you didn't start off wanting to do this. You actually wanted to be a travel writer.
Yes.
That would have been a lot safer, Polly.
And easier.
You wouldn't have to be
good
hiding,
life choices.
Hiding from death threats, really.
You could have been an expensive travel writer.
So how did it all change? Tell me about this career trajectory.
Yeah, I could have written 30 stories in a month as opposed to zero.
Yeah.
So I wanted to go and work for VAG or Go, the travel magazine. Mm. And my goal at the time was I want to be exceptionally good at what I do. Which it still is, but it changed in the meantime because someone then at VAG & Go told me, if you really want to be good, you need to go and get some experience as a reporter, as a day-to-day reporter, so that you know the who, what, where, and when of news, because then you're a good writer. Because you think when you're out of university, you're a fantastic writer. You're not. You're shitty.
Yeah,
so you need to get that experience and under work, under pressure, and so on. So VAG said, go for 3 years or 5 years, go get experience, and then you come back. And then I just never went back because this news bug just bit me, and I've been in news since ever since.
So what is it that makes you want to get up and investigate these things? Because you know you're going to uncover some sometimes very unpleasant stuff, and you're going to be dealing with very unpleasant people. And there are going to be obstacles to you discovering the truth, because people often don't want the truth discovered. It's going to land some of them in prison eventually. Exactly. We can only hope if Shamila Batoy gets her act together. I mean, if it does happen that way, and even if you just embarrass them publicly, which is what a lot of this does, it can sometimes lead to some very messy situations. So how do you find the motivation to wake up in the morning and go and research these things and go and investigate these things? Are you just curious as hell?
I am curious as hell. And it's also for the love of the puzzle. I love sort of sitting with this problem, figuring it out, and in the end says, yes, I've got that. It clicked, you know, the moment that you get a piece of information that makes this whole theory come to life and that you can actually prove it. It's a fantastic feeling if you're able to do that. The underlying motivation, though, is that I'm an African. I want to stay here. This is my country. And we need some help. We need some light to be shone on the facts. And we're not going to get there if some people don't stand up and say, okay, I'll do the work.
Mm-hmm.
And then for each story, there's a different motivation. For the VBS thing, I will never forget those pictures and the stories of the people. And it's grannies. Mm-hmm. They're older than my mother, who was sitting outside the bank on the stoop.
Trying to withdraw some money.
When we heard that the bank was imploding, they all went there. Some of them sat right through the night, and it was fairly cold, and they were wrapped in blankets, and they slept outside on these porches. And I just thought I would know, or I know exactly how my mother would feel if she lost, let's say, 300,000 rand. She don't know what happened to it. She put it in a bank. No one is explaining to her what happened. She needs to sleep outside of the bank to get her money back.
Yeah.
And there's just no certainty. And I will never, that is a big driver for me, is to say, but it's unfair. It's people who are very vulnerable. These people don't have anyone standing up for them. And that the political parties who actually put their hands up and said, we'll stand up for you, were the ones who robbed them. Sure. So somewhere we should say, this is not okay. And we, fellow South Africans, should make our voice be heard.
Now, you also spent 5 years working on the SARS situation, and you managed to shine a spotlight on Tom Moyane, who had been the commissioner at the time. And SARS always had been this part of government that had really worked well until he came in. And it was probably largely due to some of the investigations that you did that he eventually got fired, and a commission of inquiry into SARS was initiated.
Yes.
And that's amazing.
Yeah, I was very proud of that. So when the commission of inquiry was initiated, the draft questions were based on the stories that we've written and based on the things that we've uncovered, Daily Maverick specifically, and my story specifically. So it was a very proud moment, and I was very happy for it, because when Tom Moyane came in September 2014, he started decimating the investigative capacity. He started running campaigns against certain people that he viewed as anti the Zuma, or the president of the time, President Zuma, and anti a certain faction in the ANC.
Mm-hmm.
And he shielded the Guptas from scrutiny. He shielded the cigarette smugglers from scrutiny. And we could see it in our figures, our tax figures. And we could see how what he's done has really sort of done the country in. And it was a good feeling at the end, after 5 years, to say, okay, now we have results.
Have you been paying attention to what's going on at SARS now?
Yeah.
And what is your kind of top-level insight into that?
So we know that the public protector, Mkwebane, has received a letter from SARS. But I can also say, and SARS can't say this, but they've sent the similar letters to other people. And maybe over time that will come out. But it's not only that Ms. Mkwebane would like to say that she's targeted. She's not. She's one of a few who received...
What did they send her a letter about?
asked her to reveal her tax affairs and
personal tax affairs.
Yes.
Oh, and right.
From around 2010, 2011. So it's an in-depth audit telling us, bring it all. We want to see because there's a few red flags.
And you say there might be a lot of other people who've received similar letters from SARS.
Definitely, they were.
And they're now being called in to account for themselves.
Yes.
Some of these politically connected people and so
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Who were involved in Transnet corruption, SARS corruption, state capture corruption. So we are moving in the right way in terms of SARS, and it seems as if they're rebuilding that capacity. And from all the sort of state-owned entities that I've seen, they have made the biggest stride so far.
Wow. And that could mean, obviously, SARS are hungry for some tax at the moment because we're running at a loss. As a country, we're in deficit, and they're trying to recoup some of the huge amounts that they've lost over the years because of people who've been basically immunized to tax through their political connections.
Exactly, and through the help of Tom Moyani, shielding them from scrutiny.
Where's Tom Moyani in all of this? Did he get away scot-free?
So there was this commission of inquiry, and he was ousted out of SARS because of that.
Yeah.
And now we're sitting again with Shamila Batoya, as you mentioned, that she needs to initiate certain prosecutions. And if she can find anything on Tom Moyani, and there's a lot, that she can prove, they should take it to court and to criminal court specifically.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are just sitting around reading stories that journalists like you have written, and getting frustrated by the fact that there is all this information out there, which on a prima facie basis is enough to at least start some prosecutions.
Mm.
And we're just seeing nothing happening. It's almost as if Shamila Batoya is frozen in inaction. It's unbelievable. And I think that's frustrating to people, because if you don't pay your tax as Poli van Wyk, and if I don't pay my tax, and if Mbulelo doesn't and Leanne doesn't, it immediately... gets flagged, and we get called in, and we have to pay, and there are penalties, and all kinds of things kick into action. But it seems that some of these people who are sometimes in arrears in quite a devastating way, nothing's happening.
Yeah, and we need to recreate these structures in order to hold them to account.
Mm.
And there's always sort of those political affiliations. And again, it's not as if it's party specific. It's sort of this thing that grows across party lines, that we shield each other, and that it's only in parliament and at our rallies and in front of our supporters that we seem to be different. But there's no real difference. They all have these same type of goals in mind, and those goals are only themselves and their own pockets.
Yeah. So tell me, how did your life change from the point of view of all of these investigations and your own personal safety and the stuff we were talking about at the beginning? Did you have friends who didn't want to be around you anymore? Did you have family who were avoiding you? I mean, it was almost as if you had the coronavirus, I'm sure, at one point. Or not.
So my friends, there was this apartheid story of activists who had a sort of a placard saying, this guy doesn't live here. So when the apartheid forces would come and they would raid the block of buildings or flats, they would, you know, there would be this thing on the front door saying that this guy that you're looking for is not here. So they said, now they're going to do the same with me. Poli van Wyk is not living here.
Just in case people came after you.
Yeah, shame. Sure. No, but they were very supportive, and I had a lot of messages of support and saying, and from strangers as well. People sending emails to Daily Maverick and private messages saying that we really appreciate it. People from all walks of life saying thank you that you're speaking for us. And that helps a lot. That's a good driver as well.
Have you met some of these people from the VBS scandal who've been defrauded?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very sad.
And are you in regular communication with some of them?
Yeah.
Ugh.
So we try to shield the communication, so we're very careful about how we do it, but they continuously tell us their stories and their struggles, and often you can't do anything about it because it's very personal. Then I would have to say, Gareth Cliff tells me this about his life, and this is why he is down in the dumps at the moment. So, but often you just sort of commiserate and say, sorry man, I'm really doing my best on a higher level to get you some justice.
Yeah. Tell me quickly about Henley, to go back to your MBA that you're doing. The experience of doing this is obviously very, very different to journalism. Are you enjoying the academic stuff? Are you enjoying doing these case studies and these investigations of that kind?
I am. It's very interesting, and it's different subjects, so it's never monotonous or repetitive at all. So I've just finished an assignment for financial management, which was so interesting because that's anything from a micro to macroeconomic level to the market and right through to the company's statements, their bank statements and their financial statements. So to do that on that level where you actually sort of manage the business is extremely interesting. And at the moment, I'm busy with an HR subject. So it ranges from sort of interests and how different sort of sectors and different viewpoints into one business. And I think one of the great things of Henley is that you can build all of these capacities while investigating your own company.
Yeah, I think it would be terrific if we could have more journalists educated in basic economics too, because it would help us to not see so many nonsense articles written about how the free market's bad and government is better and we need more government and we need more regulation and all these things that you see in publications where they really are paying low rent journalists to write stories just based on their opinions.
It's also about ideology, right? So if you have a communism background or a socialist background or a capitalist background, that would influence your writing. I mean, we've discussed this over the past year a lot. Look at how Minister Pravin Gordhan's background influences his decisions.
Absolutely.
He was an excellent Minister of Treasury, but now, or Minister of Finance, but now we're thinking, you know, is he as good as he can be at public works?
And in the land of the blind, the one-eyed is king. I mean, amongst all those other ministers, he looks like he's good just because he doesn't have his hands in everyone else's pockets.
Exactly.
That doesn't necessarily make him a brilliant minister.
Yeah,
and
no,
you're right.
It doesn't.
Like, his background is a solid, stalwart communist.
Yes.
And maybe he just likes the idea of a capable state.
And state-owned enterprises,
absolutely.
Right? So no privatization.
Yeah.
Now, if you have so many examples of communism not working, and where you have...
No, they just didn't do it right, Polly.
We can reinvent the wheel, Gareth.
Come on, it's just you are the missing ingredient. You
know, obviously, I can do communism better.
Yeah. Pravin is the right guy.
So sometimes it's difficult telling someone that, yes, capitalism is not necessarily great and there's gaps in there.
Sure.
But if you do it right and if there's strong feedback loops and if there are strong hawks and police and national prosecuting authorities
rule of
that
law.
We don't have,
sure.
And that there are repercussions for wrong deeds, capitalism can actually work quite well, where communism hasn't worked anywhere.
Well, I think that the record is, over the last 100 years, that more people have been brought out of poverty by capitalism and the free market than anything else. And it seems to be the best way for people who are in a miserable state in places like Cuba, North Korea, the former Soviet Union, and other countries that have implemented these very state-centric operations that never seem to have traffic going into them. They always have traffic going out, trying to escape those systems. Just seems to me that argument's already been won and put to bed, but there are still people who hold a candle for it. Anyway, I don't want to get into a whole capitalist communist argument with you, because I think that we're probably on the same side. I also think it's terrific that you are a great example of what Henley can do and what you can do for the investigations, the kind of career that you have in journalism, backed up by an MBA from Henley and being able to study things that will not only enlighten you, but also the people who read everything that you write from here on in. You can go and find out more by going to Henley. You can check in on one of their 15 international campuses and offices all over the world. There are 8,000 students across the globe, 18 countries represented by faculty, and 78,000 alumni in their network. The Henley MBA is from the only international business school accredited in South Africa. As your MBA is from a leading, respected, internationally triple accredited business school, you get recognized wherever you are in the world, ensuring your global future. So, Polly, thank you very much for spending some time with us this morning. It's always good to talk to you, and especially about things that aren't just regarding the investigations that you're doing. Please keep up the hard work.
Thank you. Yes, it's such a pleasure to be here always.
Thank you. Polly van Wyk. Meet the Mind. Brought to you by Henley Business School. Only on cliffcentral.com. It may still be going through its growing pains, but there's no doubt that cryptocurrencies are here to stay. While some people will focus on the volatility and what that means in the short term, crypto's long-term outlook is worth chatting about. We've come to Luno HQ in Cape Town, where Luno Africa's GM, Marius Reitz, breaks down the future of crypto.
We're still very much at the early stages. People often compare the current state of the cryptocurrency industry to where the internet was in the early 1990s. And there's still a lot of work needs to be done to get those network effects. So the more people willingly start to use cryptocurrency for payments and for investments, the more valuable the network should become. But I think overall, broadly speaking, change typically happens when three things meet. Firstly, when there's a change in mindset, when people start to think differently about how they use and can use money. I think even if Bitcoin or cryptocurrency fails, what it would have done is it would have challenged people's thinking around money and it would have still been a success. Secondly, we're seeing a change in consumer behavior, consumer demographics and consumer needs. Consumers want things instantly and for free. They want services and goods customized to their personal preferences. And what's important here is that you need technology to be able to meet those consumer demands. And we feel now, for the first time, we have a technology in cryptocurrency that will allow us to meet these changing consumer demands. When we look at the crypto industry at this stage, it's important to take a step back and to look at the bigger picture. Sentiment in the industry is actually at the highest point it's been for a very long time. And sure, price is an important data point and people tend to be fixated on the price and use the price as a proxy for determining whether the industry is a success or not. But we've seen tremendous improvements from an adoption perspective. What we're building at Luno is something that's completely independent of the Bitcoin price. One big challenge that the industry is still facing, I think, is that of instant gratification. So people expect cryptocurrency to be better than the current financial system. People expect it to be a better store of value. People expect it to bring down the cost of remittances. People expect it to be perfectly safe and secure. And yes, cryptocurrency can be all of that, but it's not going to happen overnight. The current financial system was built over thousands of years, actually. And I think we need to be a little bit more patient and give the industry time to figure out all these issues. Good news is that we're seeing clear data points across a couple of different segments. We're seeing the price becoming less volatile. From a security perspective, from a scalability perspective, regulatory acceptance is on the uptake, and then also press coverage is also more favorable to the industry at this stage. When we look at some of the risks and then some of the mitigations that has been put in place over the past 5 years, it's also clear to see that there's been some tremendous progress. If we look at the nefarious use of cryptocurrencies, we're getting better visibility on illicit transfers, for example, better software to track these transfers, and that allows crypto players to work with law enforcement, to work with banks to ensure that the industry is safe and clear of bad actors. From a price perspective, we're seeing new developments like stablecoins, which is a cryptocurrency that is linked to real-world assets and that is designed to keep the price of that crypto more stable and make it a more attractive use for payments, essentially. And then lastly, I think important also on the scalability front, we're seeing new developments like the Lightning Network that will allow us to improve the throughput of payments on the Bitcoin network by 1,000x arguably. So I think there are clear data points and there's progress being made on a couple of fronts, but there's still a lot of work to be done. We will continue to see challenges, I think specifically on a regulatory front. Some countries taking a bit longer to form their views on cryptocurrency, and I think that will slow down progress in emerging markets across Africa and in certain parts of Southeast Asia. But I think all in all, there's tremendous growth in the industry. If you look at talent flowing into the industry and the talent joining cryptocurrency platforms like Luno, some of the best chartered accountants, people from law firms, developers flowing into the industry, I think that's also a vote of confidence in this new technology.
Decrypto is everything you need to know about buying, trading, and spending cryptocurrency. Brought to you by Luno. Only on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.